So last time we were looking into the etymological system of Sanskrit and how the roots are related to the system of varnas, or the simple etymons, system of etymons, in this systematic way. It's only in Sanskrit that we find this phenomenon in, to the extent that it is complete. You cannot find this system in any other language. If you take Greek or Latin, you will see that their etymological system is incomplete. It's partial there. I did special study of Latin and Greek for that purpose. And I saw that only some roots are available in systematic way, whereas other roots are not there. And that's why system cannot be completely visible, that it is systematic. Though you will find the same phenomenon, that the meanings are changing gradually from word to word, but then suddenly, abruptly, there is no more link in the articulatory system because it was not understood as such in systematic way. Kakhagaganga was not seen there. There was ABCD, which was coming from another system of significance. It was a mystic system of Aleph Beth coming from Hebrew language, where it signified completely different things. These were the laws of creation. This was the mysterium described in different terms, not in verbal terms. The whole confusion goes so far that it was even now it is accepted that Greeks invented vowels, that vowel sounds were not there. Even that is accepted nowadays, but it is far from the truth. Vowels were there, only it was a syllabic writing, and syllabic writing was including those vowels into syllables, and Greeks didn't have access to that knowledge. So what they did, they separated, they made non-syllabic writing, letter-wise writing, and from that time we think that Greeks invented vowels. It's such a misunderstanding. And you will find many works written, even nowadays, the most modern scholars are writing about this in a serious manner. I have a little neck problem, that's why I'm kind of trying to find myself audible to myself. My ears are blocked, and that's why it sounds very bad. You can't articulate clearly to your own mind. When your ears are blocked, you have this strange déjà vu. So today what I wanted to go into is more interesting and more difficult at the same time, is how these categories were arranged, mental categories by which we speak, or by which we rather think. Because mental categories which Indra invented from Brihaspati's sound, from that system of varnas, Indra introduced first alphabet, kakhagaghana, the systematic way of articulating sounds in a meaningful manner, in a systematic meaningful manner. And then he introduced mental categories by which we think. So what is interesting to start with, I don't want to go immediately into my tables because I want us to think before. How could one arrange linguistic space? By what means? Should it be, so to say, projecting the same outer space within inner linguistic space, or should it be arranged differently? What is the major, what are major categories in those arrangements? What do you think? What would be necessary to make language?
To resolve the differences between inner and outer.
Okay. To dissolve differences, or maybe to have the same projection, what we have outside should be projected inside. The inner space should reflect outer relations. Yes? That's what you mean. It makes sense, no? The inner space in which we think should reflect the same relations which are outside. If somebody comes to someone and says something, it should be reflected in the same way as it is outside, the same within. The same space should hold similar relations within. So how could we achieve this? No, suppose you are Indra, yeah, and you want to invent language. Can we start from this zero? It's so interesting. These are basics. Once we understand them, we understand half of our problems. What is required, first of all, to speak?
Muscular to
Rati's
tongues. The instrument.
Generally, the instrument.
Right. You see, approach of Prakriti is... instrument is required. Yes, we have instrument. Subjectively, psychologically, suppose you have all possibilities, but what would you do to make these sounds do something? And it's kind of a question, you know? We are speaking, we are taking it for granted, but we never thought what we really do to express ourselves. What do we express and how we do it?
So you imply that the sounds are already words also. So you start from the words, how we use the words?
Words. What are words? Let us start with that. What are these?
I think maybe you like to explain something.
Gestures are also words. There is no difference.
Yeah. I love this question. And since last class, I've just been thinking, what we need a new language. And I was reading your agenda volume 1, and there was another saying, we need a new language. And I think, how to do this? If you had a group that had grown up, humans, in silence, and they got to the age of 13 or 14, 15, they had to have nurturing and the company of psychically advanced adults. They're communicating without even words, the idea, if you started in silence, what would happen? That
certainly
at a certain age now speech can come.
Mm.
It was just a fanciful idea.
Mm. I think that idea that you need a central idea is essential. Mm. Because around that central idea, you would begin to focus sounds that reinforce the or the feeling, or the conception, or the place. It would have to be a focusing of sounds that would orientate the focus of consciousness. And so the idea would be prior to that.
I will take out of this what Rod said, one focus of consciousness, yes? Focus of consciousness, whether it is idea, or idea will be built by the sound, or it was prior to the sound, we will leave it for now, because we are not sure fully, because according to the Vedic vision, the words are building ideas. Yeah? They are bringing, or they are pulling out of that higher place, ideas into manifestation, into the focus of consciousness. But focus of consciousness is most essential, whether we are in silence or we are in the noisy space.
But you asked the question, what are words?
Yes.
And
I think they would have to be sounds that signify an idea. They can't just be sounds by themselves. They form words, but the words would have to have an idea attached to them.
Yes, being mental beings, we cannot but do that, yes? But if we, for a second, imagine that we are not mental beings,
yes?
So we do not know about existence of idea. We do not know. So what would happen then? Then there would be something, like Margaret was saying, some need of something which is not clear what it is, and it has to clarify itself.
Yes, yeah, this story about this child that was put to wolves or something and grow up in this wolf's family and was able to make sounds. I don't, it was like grown up like a wolf or a human being, I think in France or somewhere in France. And they studied how...
Mowgli, they have the idea of living in a different environment and building.
There's a phenomenon of sometimes twins inventing their own language, which nobody else understands. I also experienced this once when I worked with retarded children, two little mongoloids who were not related, but they were very good friends. And they had their own language. They understood what they meant. Now, what does this have? Does this have anything? Or if
of course, do, of course, why not? Why not?
Which create spontaneous sounds, which I understand. I don't know if they are aware of the system in this moment, but they are conscious, probably because they create a gestic in the same time as they express themselves with a command from their mind or consciousness to the instrument. So, I don't know if a language can be created mental.
It is a mental thing, but it's not primary mental.
Yes? But you specifically are wanting the development of words, yes, not just communication.
Yes, we will go into that, but first we have to see the foundation where these words are coming from, what they really... Of course they signify the idea and so on and so forth, but...
So the focus of consciousness, mm-hmm. is what you said, is required.
Right.
It doesn't matter whether it's an idea, or right. a perception, right. or an intention.
Yes.
Somehow there has to be yes. something around which
yes.
the word formation focuses.
Suppose two animals, they communicate very well without really words, by looks, by body language, by feeling altogether. So they feel good or bad, or something is not there what it should be, and the other one is already knowing that better not to come close to that. So basically the communication happens on all different scales, and these are languages. Of course these are all languages. In the Indian tradition they were also known, there are avadhanas of different kind. Communication through, for example, netra avadhana, by looks. And they play this game that by looks they have to communicate very exact things, by the way. And you have to be able to read from the look what other person tells you by the look. And they develop this intuition. By look you can speak. Not without body language even. So eyes can say something. Even that. So, of course, communication is one thing, which is closely related to language, which from communication this language will emerge. It requires certain relations. So outside context is defining language, linguistic space inside. And that's what was noticed, that as you were rightly saying about the animals, that they are like humans, but they need an immediate context. Without this immediate context, they cannot think. They can think within the immediate context. If the meat is here, the food is here, they around it, they understand everything. But if it is not there in their mind, they do not play this game. Why? Because they don't have language. Language, so to say, separately formed from the context. They do not have highly developed linguistic space in which, in abstract terms, they can think about those contexts. So they need always the help of the context, and then they become like human beings. There is no difference. But human beings have this possibility to build an inner linguistic space. So it should correspond, be understood, with outer space, and it should have this focus around which the context will be clarified and relations will be understood. Now, what about these relations? Who relates to who? And what is really happening? What is happening within linguistic space? When we speak, when I speak, when we together sit here, what is really happening?
Well, words are many times misleading. A person tells something and another projects his own ideas and what the other tells. So it's not
clear
at all.
If we don't have the same context. But if we have the same context, we are kind of beating around the bush, around the same bush.
Same bush.
Seeing different things, understanding different matters. Why? Because we have our own inner context. Every one of us is a separate universe of contexts, which are similar but not the same. So all our connections are built differently, but they are also similar. And what is that similarity? I'm looking into that. What is language? So what do we need for language to function? We need first ourselves. We can't do it otherwise. We need a subject, so to say. The one who subjectively perceives, understands, communicates. And if he is not there or she is not there, there is no language. Now this subject has a relation with whatever reality, inside or outside, whatever context you take. What are these relations? I is there, yes? I is the first thing without which there is no language. Abhinavagupta calls it I-ness.
So I, question.
Yes.
They say Ulysses was the first person to say I. So before there was no language, before 800?
No, it's very approximate. I don't think he was the first to say I. I think it was a joke. No. He said I in a different sense. He said I in this kind of affirmation sense.
I am Ulysses.
Yes, I am God among men. That's what he said. But before him and after him, and long before him, people were saying I. So I-ness, this subjective entry or building up around the context, is the must for the language. This I is the first name, so to say, subjective name. What are the relations? Here I want to know. The same relations as outside. If I move there, yes, or I have relations with you, or with that, or with this, this relation from I to somewhere else is to be established.
Are you speaking of, because I desire this, that sets up a relationship?
Exactly.
Or I fear that.
Yes.
That sets up a relationship. I hate that.
Yes. So there is I and not I. Mm-hmm. Yeah? Me and something else with which I have certain relations or I don't have relations. Whatever it is in the language, it has to be reflected. It's very interesting when children are born, they are kind of showing they want to get something on the table, far from the table, and then they are surprised that it is not in their hand, you know? And they cry. Ah, it doesn't come to the hand. Why? Because the relation of this between I and the context is understood in the child's mind, that beautiful, innocent mind, that their will to have it should act, and it doesn't act. These beings are not moving somehow in this manifested world. In that subtle world from where they come, most probably they move. The command for that to be here acts, but here it doesn't act. So it doesn't have the same effect. That's why they cry. They are disappointed. This world is tough for them. It doesn't listen to their command, to their will, to their wish to have a relation with the context. Now, the first relation with the context is that it is not me, and I have something with that. These are spatial relations in space. So this question first is what we call the name, yes, subject, substantive, I, or any other name, a teacher, a student, a father, a mother. These are substantives which are showing that the I is there in the objective sense, which will have certain relations with non-substantive. Now, these relations are spatial, first of all. Where do I go? Yeah. I go home. I go home. That means me have certain relations with something which is not me. Where? Where and direction are the same in Sanskrit. I must tell you first that before I had a privilege to study Sanskrit language together with linguistics at the same time. And I saw that linguistics cannot really deal with these matters without knowledge of Sanskrit. This is my discovery. And I discovered these things later in Sanskrit alone, that it is fully properly systematized in syntactic sense also, not only in phonetic sense. Syntax is that form of thought by which we think, but by which we build our language in our linguistic space, is completely regular and transparent. So I'm leading you to this scheme.
But what you are saying now is that we still end up with words that are chunks of space, time, or temporal, or spatial, or sensual. We still have that. But Sanskrit advances...
Systematic. It's very systematic, and we'll see how it is systematic. So in one lesson you can learn 50% of language by this simple scheme. What I'm saying is that it is systematic in the form of language that you recognize. You don't need to learn, you need to understand.
You're saying Sanskrit is, but I'm fascinated with the idea of the development of language comes out of the mind, but the mind's job is to break things into chunks.
Right.
And then so you end up with words that break things
right.
into chunks.
Right.
Right. So Sanskrit has taken us beyond this.
No, it takes us exactly there, straight. So not beyond. Because language is thinking process. Language is thinking. It's nothing else. Language requires categories. Categories such as substantive, space, cause, time, manner, aim. So you see in this, I'm kind of cutting it a little for you not to show immediately everything, because I don't want you to be bewildered by this. So what I want to show you is this small scheme here. Is it visible? These on the top, substantive, space, cause, time, manner, aim, are mental categories, categories of thinking. And you can immediately recognize them. Yeah? Now, before going into this fully, I want to define certain things from the zero point. Zero point, it's me and some context, yes, to which I have to have relations. So from my side towards that end where it is not me, I am going home, or from that home back to me, are two different spatial relations, yes? One is from myself towards the context, and other is from the context towards me. And you see two different relations? And they are, so to say, the direction towards which I move, or the cause from which I come back. So to say, ablativeness. That where I return to myself from. from where I start towards and where I return to myself from. Now, there is one more relation, time relation. What is time and how time relates in this particular relation? If I am moving from there to there and from there back to myself, what it has to do, how time could relate to this movement? Is there something more than these two relations, from myself to the context and from the context to myself?
There must be a starting point and a termination.
Right.
That's pure time.
Yes, but what does it mean, starting point and termination? How do we know how it works?
To go from here to there.
Yes.
Or for that to come to here from there.
Yes.
Involves a starting point and a terminus.
Yes.
So that's a spatial relationship, but it's a movement from one reference point to another reference point.
Yes.
So this fundamental spatial relationship is a matter of perception and also of the logical structure of existence.
Right.
So the fundamental underlying principle is a logical structure.
Yes. These are mental categories. They are coming from the mind. Indra has built language. So Indra has built this language together with the world. World corresponds to this linguistic space. It's not something else. We are not thinking something different than the world can do. We are in the same relations. These mental relations are reflected in the world. Now, it's a very important point to see that the starting point and end and coming back is also time relation.
Because now, it's how long it takes us to do this.
Yes.
Or how much a certain thing weighs, we get those categories for another kind of work. So let me see if I can guess what you're saying. So the development of time words is the time moving in the space. Is that how time works?
Exactly.
Yeah.
That's what I want to say.
It doesn't have to be measured.
Yes, it doesn't have to be measured, that's why it is time. But if it is measured, it can be measured in terms of space. Because when I move from here to my home, the planet Earth will turn, and the galaxy will turn, and the sun, and everything will turn, and this is spatial relation. I do not see that bigger scale of spatial relations, that's why I come to the closer time relation. This clock. What is this clock doing? It is just showing me the relation of all those movements on the smallest scale. There was an interesting explanation of time by Uspensky, by the way, which is relevant here. He looked into the mirror and he said, and he looked at his photo when he was a child, and he said, come, this is the same person. Child and in the mirror, this guy, they are not the same. What happened in between this person and this person? What was happening? What was that time which changed this child to this adult?
And yet, when you think about yourself as a child, you realize there is something inside that is this what you call this I-ness. It doesn't change.
Yes, yes. And even it changes opposite. We become more and more like children at the end of our life. But even that, I want to say, what has happened to this body, to this appearance? What did time do? And he came to the very interesting description. He suddenly saw that actually the body of the child moved through all those spaces. Spaces. Now, if you can connect all those spaces into one space, you will have a notion of time. It's an interesting perception. All those spaces is a power of movement, which once connected into one space becomes a notion of power, of time. I once asked my sister, if I will press your 10 years into 5 minutes, everything you had, all your experiences, all your troubles in life, what would happen to you? And she said, I would flame. And it is not far from the truth. That the power which distributed our space, all this space, if we condense into small space, it will be so dense, so hot, so much there to experience in this particular moment that it will flame. This is the fire. Fire which is distributing, pulling out space in time. Sri Aurobindo says time is Shakti, which creates the worlds. The power. So that power can be measured by spatial events or on a bigger scale, or it can be referred to, yes, you know, on other scales, but it is still relating to space. That's what I wanted to say, that there is nothing new in this relation from myself to the context and back. These stay as major relations. Now, if I move from here home on the bicycle, or I walk, or I run, or I go by bus, what would be the difference between my relation to that context? It is manner. Time also, I will be faster or slower. Manner, how I do it. I can go like this, I can go by jumping, I can go by crawling, and so on. I can do many different varieties in that movement from myself towards the context. This is the manner, how. And there is one more aim. It is something which is additional here, which I should not even mention, because space and towards the space is already having that aim. Yes? Aim is a purely already mental category. And in English, why has two meanings, why as an aim and why as a cause. Both are kind of blended into it and difficult to distinguish. In Sanskrit, they are different. The cause and the aim are two different relations. So, you see, there is only one relation of my to the context and context to myself through time and manner, yeah? And there is nothing else, not much more to really think of. Why I'm kind of emphasizing this? Because I think it is crucial for us to see how simply we are organized and our thinking is organized. There are no endless mental categories, there are only few. And once they are understood, language becomes transparent and clear. So we have substantives, who or what, I or he or she or that or this. So, and relations will be through suffix tra, so I drop secondary suffixes. So if I, oh, these are secondary. Here I have to be. So, who, substantive, or what can have also very interesting relations through question, through relation, through pointing far and near. Yes? For example, question is who, and relative is who. Relative, who is coming today, we will see, we will meet him yet. Next time. So, who and question and relative in Sanskrit are two different words. In English is the same word. Relative word and question word. And also pointing that one and this one far and near. And there is nothing else. There is a question, relation, far and near. Now these are the only qualifiers for the substantive. So these are questioning words. Kim, kah, ka, yeah? Who, what, who and who for masculine and feminine. Yat, yah, ya, relatives. Tat, sah, sa, adah, amu for pointing far. Etad, eshah, esha for pointing near. So if I add tra suffix to these qualifiers, so it will be ka is kutra, yatra, tatra, atra. Yes? Tra is qualifying space. So I will say kutra, what space is where? Yatra, what space I am going, in that space I will meet you. Yeah? Tatra, there, that space. Atra, here, this space. Now, this here, there, where, all these words are not showing you spatial relations. But here in Sanskrit, you can clearly perceive them through this suffix tra. Moreover, if you go farther, you will take other substantives, like every sarva, and you add tra, sarvatra, then you will have everywhere. Then you add to eka, one, ekatra, somewhere. Then you add, so on, anya, other, anyatra, elsewhere. Itara, itaratra, elsewhere. Bahu, many, bahutra, in many places. Now, we are coming to those difficult meanings which in English cannot be translated only by sentences. Purva, first, purvatra, in the first place, or before, or in that space. You see, it's not even possible to find immediately a word in English. Paratra, vriksha, no, vriksha we are not going. But in Sanskrit, in Vedic Sanskrit, we find also that this tra is used also with other substantives, like deva, god, devatra, among gods. That means that there was a flexibility in language where you could put any substantives with this tra. And most probably if children will be using this language, they will be using it like this, you know. We can say naratra among men, devatra among gods. Yes? We can use tra for location, for the spatial relations.
Question?
Yes?
This is a request. At some point, could you address the beginning of, in Sanskrit, or as far back as you know, fear and desire. I mean, that may come later on, maybe something special, but it's a request.
Yes, we will come to all kind of interesting discussions, I'm sure, that if we will have space and time for that. What I am interested in to show you something very systematic, how Sanskrit deals with these notions of space, causality, time, manner, aim, number, how it is regular and systematic. And so if we go to cause, where from, then tach is used in a regular sense throughout, through all substantives. Kutach, where from, yatach, because, or from there, from where, relative. Because is actually a translation of this, yes? Where from, relative. Where from we have this. Where from is because there was a cause. Be it cause, then that is that, in a way. Tatach, from there, atach, from here, and then all substantives without any exclusion are used for tach, sarvatach, from everywhere, ekatach, from somewhere, and so on and so forth. Vrikshatach, from the tree, grihatach, from the house, yeah. Utpithikatach, from the table, martintach, from Martin, vladimirtaha, from Vladimir. You can put any name with tach, would have this meaning of ablativeness, where from, regular, and accepted by grammar. Time relation, da suffix, and kada, tada, yada, ida, idanim, sarvada, ekada, sada. You can imagine already immediately, kada, when, yada, when, tada, then, ida, idanim, now, sarvada, always, yes, ekada, once upon a time, as we say, sada, always, anyada, other time, and so on.
We can add also that languages like Russian and Polish, we have cases. So in Russian, Polish, kada is kedy, kagda. the same origin for the Sanskrit and Slavonic languages have cases. And we have the same manner of expressing questions, like in Sanskrit.
Yes, yes. They are very close to Russian, by the way. This kada, tada, тогда, когда, and so on. Mene, katham, yatha, tatha. Tha or tham expresses mene. So, in what manner? Katham, how? Yatha, how? Tatha, thus. Yeah? Itham, in this way. We don't have in English, we have only thus. We don't have in this manner. In that manner, in this manner, far and near plane. Sarvatha, in every manner. Ekatha, in one manner. Yeah? And so on. Anyatha, otherwise. Bahutha, in many ways. Purvatha, as before. And so on. So, you see, there are no other substantives used in this particular way, but it does not mean that there cannot be such usage. And if language develops, it can take on itself, and there are many such usages you find in Vedic Sanskrit, which will prove me wrong here, and you will find suddenly, like Devatra, I didn't look for them, but I'm sure you can find them, this usage that it will show us that it was used in this particular way. Kim artham? Artham is the aim. Artham means the object or the meaning. So, kim artham, what is an aim? Yes? Why? Yad artham, the same relative. Tad artham, for that purpose. Etad artham, for this purpose. Sarvartham, for all. Ekartham, for one. Anyad artham, for another. Bahvartham, for many. Purvartham, for previous one, and so on. Mitrartham, for the friend. Vrikshartham, for the tree. For the sake of the tree, or for the tree, and it is regular through all the language. Vladimirartham, for Vladimir.
Yes,
yes. Bottleartham, for the bottle. For the sake of the bottle I am doing this. Why I am saying all this, that you can see that how Sanskrit was arranging these spatial relations within the language, which builds up primary syntax. So you basically can now, with this small knowledge, say anything in Sanskrit language. Yeah? Anything. Just look into this table and you can shoot and say relations will be all defined in spatial and time-wise terms. And if you do it wrong, it doesn't matter, because it will be understood within the language. Because children are doing it wrong, but it is always understood what they want to say. And that's what I want to widen our scope of possibilities. I don't want to narrow us to this certain selection in classical Sanskrit, which was using only those few possibilities. The possibilities are many, yeah? And they are very systematic and transparent. So there are also numbers, there are a few things more here, which we have to mention, number, quality, and resemblance. I will. You can see here, number, how many, kati, tati, yati, that many. It is staying as an adverb. It doesn't change its form. Quality-wise, how much and how many, or how great, which was used also kiat and vat suffix also, tavat, yavat, etavat, sarvavat, as that, great as all, ekavat, great as one, or as one, anyavat, as another, bahuvat, as many, and so on and so forth. And what kind? Drish, drish is a look. What does it look like? Kidrish. How does it look like? Yadrish. Tadrish. He looks like that. Etadrish. He looks like this. Sadrish. Resembles. And there are no more these. But you will have them absolutely in the Vedic language many times. You can have Surya Dresh looking like Surya, and so on and so forth. And suffixes of abstract name, Nes ship, which we have in English, Ta and Tvam, Tatvam, that-ness, Etatvam, this-ness, Sarvatvam, wholeness, Ekatvam, uniqueness, if you like, oneness also. Ekata, oneness, these are words used in Hindi, those who are coming from Indian background. There is hardly anybody here, or there is none. This is, oh, you're, sorry. You're so non-Indian to me already that I'm looking straight to you and I don't see you. I will give. I will leave this printout for you to look into, because this is the whole language in all its relations. And these categories are met in every language. You will see them. They are not only regular. You do not see the suffix which shows that particular relation. So we are not aware of these things. Otherwise, we would become as clever as we can be in Sanskrit language. There are also secondary suffixes, which are also very interesting, but I will not trouble you with them. To these formations, other suffixes can be added, which are, like for example, tya, just once to mention. Kutra is where. Kutra tya, of what place? This kutra adverb becomes adjective. Kutra tya. Tatra tyaha janaha. The people who are coming from that place. So the whole sentence is to be used to translate those secondary suffixes. And there are many of them. But they are not essential. Essential are the first row, of these first suffixes of space, cause, time, manner, aim, number, quality, and abstraction, making abstract names.
So I have a question. It rather dawns dimly on me. Whether this is what the following is true, in Sanskrit, the suffix or prefix has the less meaning in it. I was thinking, I don't know how to say it, but like in German, the word the prefix it has no meaning by itself, but it can be used in many different ways.
Right. Exactly this. So these are affixes which are used only for grammatical purposes, of relation, of subjective relation with the context. We should not forget this. Without subject and context, there is nothing of this exists. It all exists only in this particular context, of relation of the subject with the context. Aim, also number, which is qualifying there, substantive. Number is qualifying the substantive. How many of them? How great is substantive? So see, I put these suffixes at the end because they are not essential. They are qualifiers for the substantive, but the first five are completely essential. Yes? Substantive, space, cause, time, manner, and aim. These are all qualifiers for relations with the context. This is the whole subject of today. I don't want to overload more you because it's a structure of the mind. And you will see that we are all thinking in those terms all the time. All our questions are based on these particular mental or semantic relations.
One question is not a question problem, but as language developed, Sanskrit is a substantive language. The concentration of one word combines with predicates, affixes, and it's later the same meaning expressed by analytic methods in ways.
Yes.
You have a division between prefix independent, affix independent, and you can separate them in phrase. Syntax is different. It's a very important because it happens now. Language like Polish is synthetic. Cases like Russian, but now we have tendency that some cases are disappearing. Neutral gender is disappearing in spoken language. because it's not interpreted by masculine and feminine. It's frequent in pronouns.
The same happens to English. English had many genders, by the way, before in 19th century. You can see that those words had genders. Now they don't have. They are all it. So, except those who are directly feminine and masculine. But otherwise, you know, love. Love is he, I found out from Sri Aurobindo's poetry. I never knew that love is he in English.
Yes.
But because in our language it is she. Not he. So you have always these kind of strange things with connecting to gender, but categories stay the same.
Yeah.
You cannot. Yeah, they are expressed differently by analytical means, but they will not alter. This is something which our mental structure is based on. Yes, it's the logic. It's the whole
difference. Sanskrit phrase which has three words can be translated in that language using seven or eight words.
Yeah.
See?
Yeah.
So translation no longer.
Yes, yes. We are looking into the difference between synthetic and analytical languages, that analytical languages need many more words which are only for grammatical purposes, like articles. I am going to the school, I am going to the school. Seven words. Vidyalayam gacchami, two words, yes, in Sanskrit. So, seven and two, all those other words, auxiliary verb, affix, article, and so on, they are all two, they are all of grammatical use only. They have no meaning in themselves. They are not substantives. Right.
And in Germany, I think we develop a very clear that you're detached. You say that has to be done. That means there is this strong relation from subject to object, not personified. That's very much used. You step back and you see the things, and it could be good to do this, or this has to be done.
There are many ways of organizing this, the relations, and we will look into those ways how they are organized in the sentence, yes, by passive voice or by active. Where in all this do you see here words? We were starting with words. What are these?
Do you, two forms.
Interesting. There are no words here, huh? Only structures. So these structures of the mind by which we operate, we can fill them with any kind of words. Words are something else. We do not know yet what are those. We will look into that again. What are these words? We can think about it already. We see clearly that we even feel that it is filling us, our mind, with structures, and there is nothing yet concrete was said. Yeah? It's all relative. It's all these relations of us with the context, but there is nothing substantial in these relations. The words are not there. These are structures. That's what language is about. It's about structures.
For the purpose of understanding, we have separated it now, but in reality, this separation does not really exist, because the structure would not have come into existence if there would be that
substantive, yes.
That substantive is expressed,
right.
Relate itself in a different context.
Very true, very, very true. And still, it is different. It is different in some other qualitative way. It's another quality altogether. The noun, the word, the noun, the name. What is that name? It is beyond structures. And it is engaged into this manifestation by structures. And we can look into that, how these names appear, what they signify, and how they are structured in our linguistic space next time.
But you made many words.
Yes, I use words, otherwise I can't really say it.
You were putting them together.
Yes. These are...
Yatra.
Yes.
And you have a word.
Yes, but it is not important if I say vrikshata, from the tree. What is important is not vriksha, but that is from the tree. This from structure, relations, is dominating that noun. I'm not saying the tree. I'm saying from the tree. So if I would say a tree, it would mean something else. There is no yet structure there.
Not much. Doesn't mean much.
Doesn't mean much because there is no sentence, but if the sentence comes in, then it would mean, because every expression needs a secondary name, the primary and secondary name, to which I want to go next time, if you... But we can look into it immediately, that whatever I say, for example, now if I am bringing your attention to and would like to clarify this point more and more, and you see I am not ending my sentence yet, and you are waiting for this end to happen, and nothing is happening, and your tension is growing. You see how interesting syntax works. I didn't give secondary name. And you are all tense, 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 and growing, growing. Secondary name is a must to finish the statement. So when I give first statement, it's not enough, even with all those additions in between. We are still holding in the mind where he puts that last dot. Where is that secondary qualifier for the first name coming in? What does he want to say? It's not clear until I do that. So we will look into that structure of the sentence and what names are playing and how they are structured within the language next time, and how Sanskrit deals with that in a very beautiful, systematic way as well as this.
Last time when you listed the arnas, one of them was existence.
Yes.
So existence implies a subject.
Exactly.
Which has to have a name.
Right. Exactly. Exactly.
So you can't have space and time and motion without that subject that moves in space and time.
Without subject there is no space, no relation, nothing. Without name there is no motion, no verbs, nothing is possible. There are two schools in Indian philosophy of language which believe that verb is primary, yes, and others that the name is primary, the noun. So the Yaska and Panini, we will look into the, so to say, dispute. What is primary?
I had a comment. When you mentioned the beginning prior to language being the arnas, you have to start from that space, and then when you have the object, you get the duality.
Mm.
It's exactly the same as the creative process, which starts from an absolute self, and then there is the manifestation and the duality.
Mm.
And in the case of language, it's got to be something, when God tells us that's what distinguishes us from the animal kingdom, then it definitely seems to be a divine power.
Mm.
Mm-hmm.
I mean,
the opposite is true. Opposite is true. Things which are not named doesn't exist. Things which is not things generally are not named. You deprive of existence. The opposite.
In the Abhinava Gupta's terms, it is ahamta, I-ness, and idanta, thisness. Thisness and I-ness. Two relations, beautiful. All this is this, yeah? But I has a very particular role to play there. And if it is not there, thisness does not exist. It doesn't have any relation to any consciousness. So it cannot be known, perceived, dealt with, related to, communicated with.
Actually, those are the more the subject of the philosophy of evolution course. And where do these movements originate? That's more the subject of the other course than this one. You're really interested.
I must say that I'm very hot because I'm tired.
Yeah.
It's too hot.
It's on a full moon night, I can stay for that class.
You must stop, otherwise I can't see.
Yeah, in terms of language, we can also examine this and see what Sanskrit does with this. With
whether the word itself has to say something about it.
Yes, and it is quite interesting because there are many different movements of this kind of desire. And if I will give you all, if you want, I can list you all the words of desire and look into their significances. Then you will see how many varieties of desires you may have, and also of cognition in general. It's a very rich language, you know.
But the language is about those realities.
Right.
So the substance of the realities themselves constitute a different focus.
Does those conditions are as old as the first emergence of mind?
Right. Absolutely. Right. Yeah, absolutely. So that's exactly what the other course is about. The emergence of mind is the subject.
They are the lowest and they are also the highest. They are not the lowest in a pure sense because they have to be already there formulated in some sense, in some view. They are projected into the lowest, into the manifestation of the form. But in the mind they are already there. Mind is not free from, the linguistic space is not different from outer space radically, is not different. It is different, but it is not completely different. So all those issues are already in the mind, in the language. Not only through evolution of the body, but before even. Because
there's a spatial feeling for sound.
Yeah, well.
Sound, for instance. Spatial feeling. Who taught you this? I mean, some of us have had this from our earliest, even almost from baby.
Yeah.
Without being able to name the input or the note or whatever. It's a question of a certain structure that seems to be. Correspond somehow.
Yeah, etymology is more interesting subject than this structure. This structure is a little bit heavy on the head. You can feel too mental. We are all becoming like this, you know. Brain is paining. No, it's true. It's true. I can feel it within myself and within you already. Everybody is kind of okay. Just drop it already. Let it be. And it is a heavy subject, mental creation, yes, within the structure of language. But without it, we would not understand much of language. And language is not speech. There is a difference between speech and language. The speech, what we use the structure, yes, in whatever way we like. And I told you last time that I made this comparison once of two different texts, filled with different content, but with the same syntax, yes? I will do this exercise together. If you want, we can do it once together. The two stories are written with the same syntactic relations, but of two different matters, yes? Two different subjects. And when you read one, and then read another after, immediately after, you get a very strange feeling. Because the structure is repeated through different story. And it is like a deja vu feeling, you know, like, oops, I remember this already from somewhere. And that structure is repeated. The structure is also having its own significance. We are speaking now in structures. We are not speaking in real, deeper terms. We are drawing pictures. I am telling you from here to there, from there, there, and back. Do you understand what I mean? You say, yes. I understand what you mean, from here to there, from there to there and back. Ah, you understood. That's how we speak. We are not really pointing to anything deeper. We do not express anything deeper by consciousness. We are sliding within the structures. Just look at our all organizational matters, how we organize our work. We are over-organized. That's what is domination of mental structure over human beings.
Is that why poetry
also
goes out of the structure?
Exactly.
Of it, because it's really touching on
some deeper matters, yes. Some deeper feeling of the varna, of the meaning of the sound, of articulation of the meaning. These things are gone. We have over-mentalized. Of course, not all of us. We are trying to come back.
The source of language, because language is many sources. Not only mental, it is in subconscious and higher levels. So the poetry deals with opening to higher levels, exactly.
Right.
This freedom above and right. Below, we are in consciousness. We are prisoners of the world on a natural level. But if you are free.
Yes. We were looking into this, by the way, last time, what you're saying exactly. So shall we end today with a minute of silence? Sorry for these difficult matters, for these mental things. Next time we will go into maybe more dynamic relations.